dog pumping out, trying to read over my shoulder too much. I'll have to look up there to see what we're talking about next. So I think this is a great idea. I'm so glad that Jeff organized this session so we can come and tell you guys a little bit about some of the outbreaks we've worked on with salmonella and humans, getting their illnesses from animals. Because we really want to partner with you guys. And I'll give an example of a partnership we've developed with NPIP, the National Poultry Improvement Program, or PLAN, which is a voluntary group of chicken breeders and poultry farmers, and some work we've been doing with them. We'd love to do the same kind of things with y'all. So just a little background on salmonellosis. I'm not sure what everybody knows about salmonella. It causes diarrhea, fever, and abdominal cramps between about 12 and 72 hours after you're infected. Lasts about 4 to 7 days, and most people recover without needing treatment. Most people don't even go to the doctor. We have about 42,000 cases that are reported each year, so these are people who are sick, go to their doctor, have a culture taken, and get reported to us. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. We estimate there's at least 1 million illnesses and probably about 400 deaths in this country each year. The elderly, infants, and those with impaired immune systems are more likely to have a severe illness, especially looking at children. The rate of diagnosed infections in children under 5 is higher than the rate in all other persons. Could be because children are more likely to be taken to the doctor when they're sick. Adults, well, I'll deal with it for a couple of days and get over it. But it could also be because they're just more likely to be infected. We know that reptiles, amphibians, birds, everything with feet, it seems like, and without feet, is known to shed can carry salmonella, and many of these animals shed it asymptomatically. So just to talk a little bit about outbreaks, so you guys know kind of how we find outbreaks. It's definitely not an arbitrary process. First, the person has to become sick, and they actually have to go to their doctor. The doctor then has to take a stool culture, a stool sample, and send it off for culture, and we have to isolate the organism. Once the organism is isolated, undergoes some testing, we figure out the serotype of salmonella, and it goes through this PFGE process, which is what this is. It's pulse gel field electrophoresis. It's a DNA process that produces this DNA fingerprint. It looks like this. And then every day, every couple of days, every week, our laboratory folks look in the database for all of the PFGE patterns that look alike. And that's how we group outbreaks. So we're finding a lot more outbreaks that we never found previously. Because you could have a salmonella, typhimurium floating around out there, thousands of cases. Most of those aren't related. We have to look at the PFGE pattern to find the ones that are related. This will all be important as we talk about some of these other outbreaks. So we identify our cluster of identical PFGE patterns. It's usually based on locality. We find 6 people with this PFGE pattern in Texas during the last 2 weeks. And it's maybe a pattern we've never seen before. That's a flag that something's unusual. If it's one that we see hundreds of cases of each year, not something that's likely to trigger us to look at it. My slide messed up a little bit. So then the state and local authorities interview these cases. That's not something that we can do. We don't have the jurisdiction to call somebody who lives in Texas, for example, and ask them questions, unless the state gives us the okay to do that. So once we find a cluster of illnesses, we'll have a call with all the states that are involved, and we'll say, you know, Texas, you've got 6 cases, California, you have 8, Massachusetts, you have 3, and then it's up to the states to call and interview those patients. Hopefully they've already done it before we notify them of the cluster, but not always. There's lots of issues with resources, as you guys are probably a lot, and I'm sure are familiar with. So we'll talk just for a few minutes about a couple of different outbreaks I know are of interest to Jeff and probably to some of you guys. I'm going to start with the amphibians. We'll save the hot button topic, the baby turtles, for last. So I can throw up a few things that are fodder for discussion. The amphibians technically went from 2009 to 2011, but we looked back in the database and found a whole lot of cases from 2008, interviewed about 25 of them, and they all had amphibian exposure. So I put 2008 up here. There were at least 241 illnesses in 42 states. 30% were hospitalized, and the vast majority were less than 10 years old, with a median age of 5. A lot of these were, well, let's start. We went through the interview process, and things were coming up like Cheez-It crackers or Goldfish crackers. And so this is a tough one to crack because those are things that little kids eat. And so we're trying to figure out, is this something little kids eat, or is this something little kids were exposed to? In the end, 63% of cases reported frog contact in the week before illness. And this was a tough one to tease out because a lot of people, you know, had a fish, they didn't think about the frog, they had these little frogosphere, you know, little bulb kind of things, get the frog, feed it once a quarter, never changes water sort of thing. And they didn't think of it as being a pet when we asked if they had any animals or pets in their houses. Some of these cases, it took multiple interviews to tease this information out before we realized, oh, all of these people had frogs. Most of them were these African dwarf frogs, totally aquatic frogs, lived in a little aquarium, Often on the diaper changing table or next to the kitchen sink. We had some great pictures of here's the frog, here's the baby bottles, here's the kitchen sink. They were all right there together. So a lot of it is an awareness issue, definitely. But like it's, well, we bought this frog to put in the baby's room because we knew turtles had salmonella. So we bought him a frog instead. And the frog had salmonella. But we did trace this to one breeder in California. So this is a successful one. A lot of these we never trace back to the original source. I know Megan mentioned earlier about receipts. People go to shows and buy animals and swap them around. If there's no receipt, trail ends there. We can't trace it without receipts. So that helps us with public health as well. If you guys get and keep receipts of who you sell to and who you buy from, it's immensely helpful to us when we have an outbreak. This one we did trace to a single breeder in California. Some strange stuff going on. He had wooden tanks. Wood gets moist, keeps water, grows bacteria wonderfully. He started working with some industry experts, developed some interventions. He quit shipping for several months, really cleaned up his facility. I believe he is shipping again. We've had just a handful of cases since he started shipping, and most of those bought their frog before this outbreak started. So this was a really successful one where the guy was willing to work with the industry, work with us, made some interventions. We have not seen any new cases with newly purchased frogs since he put these interventions into place. There's more information. I'll put our website on a lot of these slides in case people are interested, and I can certainly send those to you as well. Hedgehog is a very, very recent one. It's ongoing. It's not one that I am terribly involved in. We have had 14 cases in 6 states. This is one of those with a weird BFGE pattern that we hadn't seen before. So immediately knew something was up and was pretty easy to call these people and find out that 10 of 10 who were interviewed had hedgehog exposure, which is an unusual exposure in and of itself. So very quickly we're able to figure out what it was. It is an ongoing investigation. As far as I know, the tracebacks are still pending. They have not tied this back to one single breeder or source as far as I know. Although there probably is one original source at some point because it's an unusual pattern. Frozen rodents. I did put some flyers on the front table. We've made up an educational flyer on frozen rodents and safety. I had some on frogs and turtles that I mistakenly left in Atlanta, but I'll show those in a minute. So this is an interesting one. We were actually notified about this outbreak by the authorities in the UK, who had 500 illnesses in about a year's period. And because things that are imported in the UK come in undergo certain permits and testing, they very quickly were able to trace this back to one specific facility. When they notified us, we looked in our database, we said, we had about 10 cases that year. It wasn't above baseline, wasn't something worth investigating. But the next year we looked again, and we had about 77 cases, so we started investigating. And we were able to trace it back to the same facility. There was an investigation done on site. They found the strain causing the outbreak in the facility. This facility has since started irradiating their rodents. So once they are euthanized and frozen, they're shipped out for irradiation. I believe come back into the facility and then are shipped out to the purchasers. The problem with the frozen rodents is a lot of them are shipped in big gallon Ziploc bags. And there's no labeling, there's no lock codes, there's no way to trace these. Then they get out to the pet stores, and you may only need one frozen rodent a month if you have one snake. So you're not going to buy a bag of 12 or 24 or 48 rodents, so they are repackaged at the local facility. So this is also a hard one to trace back. So some of our recommendations have been to start putting warning labels on the bags. You know, rodents carry salmonella. We know that. We've known that for years. But people weren't thinking about that. They were microwaving them in their microwaves. They put their food in, defrosting them on their kitchen countertops and coffee mugs that they may have then turned around and had coffee out of later. So kind of thinking to treat these things like you treat raw chicken. Disinfect your countertop after it's been thawed out. Just some basic handling procedures that really weren't in place. People just weren't thinking about priorities. I learned a lot about the rodent industry with this outbreak. We asked, well, why can't you wash them? Because, you know, you euthanize them. When something dies, it urinates and defecates on itself. And we said, well, if you're just washing them, would solve this process. And the guy said, no. Tried that, the snakes won't eat them. So I guess there's some extra seasoning that comes out when the rat dies and urinates and defecates on itself. So washing was apparently not the answer, but irradiation seems to be working from what we can tell. Wisconsin did an environmental investigation with this one, and they went out to a case patient's home, you know, asked permission to come in and do some testing, and they did find the same strain in the human as in the bearded dragon that had eaten the frozen rodents that was also in the frozen rodent. So the reptile had also picked it up, most likely from the frozen rodent. I don't believe he was sick. He was asymptomatically shedding. we don't know how long he could asymptomatically shed. So this, you know, this could now be in this reptile's GI tract for the rest of his life, potentially. A lot unknown about long-term shedding in these animals. So now we'll talk about turtles, and I'll tell you about an ongoing 6 outbreaks that we're working with. As we all know, the under 4-inch turtles have been banned for sale, and I find various years. Every time I look this up, I find 73, 74, 75. What was it, 74? They were banned, 75? 75, okay, so that should be 75. Prior to the ban, there were an estimated 280,000 illnesses in the U.S. in 1972 that were linked to small turtles. We've had 11 multi-state outbreaks since 2006. That does not count all the outbreaks that are within a state or all the isolated states, all the isolated cases that states might investigate that never get reported to us. These are only the multi-state outbreaks that we find in the lab database that we then go out and investigate. And that includes 500 illnesses and one death that was in a 3-week-old infant, I believe in 2007 was the death. And it also includes what we're currently working on, which is nearly 200 as of September 20th. It's probably more than 200 this past week. Persons from 31 states, 36 have been hospitalized, 63% are less than 10 years, and almost 30% are less than 1 year. So a lot of infants being exposed either to the water or to the adult who's handled the turtle and then hasn't washed their hands, possibly put it in a little bowl on the side of the changing table for something for the infant to watch, not 100% certain how they're all getting exposed. Interestingly, in this outbreak, we've got 55% of patients are Hispanic, something we don't see a lot in our outbreaks, especially with the zoonotic outbreaks. So we're really trying to reach out and do some education with the Hispanic community. I was talking to, sorry, I can't remember your first name, earlier today about how, you know, can we reach the community, and we've got some stuff on CDC Español, and trying to get some information out. So anybody who has connections to the community, we would love to work with you on getting information out there. This particular outbreak has 3 different serotypes and a whole slew of PFGE patterns involved. I'll show you a schematic in a minute. But of those who were interviewed, 72% reported exposure to turtles, and 92% of those were the turtles under 4 inches, the small guys. Most of them, well, it's 40% are coming from street vendors. So these are really hard to trace. We get to the person who is sick, you know, oh, I got into the flea market last weekend, and in some of these cases, the state goes back at the flea market, and the guy's gone. He's moved on to another flea market. So we've got to get to the guy at the flea market to find out where he's getting his turtles to be able to stop the problem. Also, gifts and internet sales, some from souvenir shops. You know, it was summertime, people were at the beach. Lots of Florida beach shops were selling these little guys, along with other assorted. My son came home from the beach with a hermit crab this summer. We were not on the trip. He showed up with a hermit crab. He was a surprise to our family this summer. But this is the outbreak, kind of our schematic that shows the 6 different outbreaks. And this is an old one that has 168 cases, 196 now. But you can see we call them outbreak 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And in some of these cases, when the state interviews the person who's sick, they'll say, you know, a lot of the states will ask, can we come to your house and do an environmental investigation? Can we swab, you know, your turtle or your reptile, whatever you have? In this instance, they were turtles. They went and took water tank samples. And we were able to link these 2 outbreaks because the person in this house would have had, say, Salmonella San Diego strain A. And when they went and tested the water, they found that strain, and they also found this strain, and they also found this strain in the water. And so we were able to link several of these outbreaks together, which makes us think there's a source somewhere that experienced some sort of mass contamination from whatever reason it was. And we don't know because we don't know what the original source was yet.
That's
in the turtle water. Right, so in the turtle water, in the tank, in the home. And there's a process for going out and collecting the water and how much to take and how to store it and process it. And several, and this is a small font, but you can also look at it on the website. There's environmental samplings of turtles and turtle tank water from the home of one person with San Diego strain A yielded 2 strains. So the water didn't even yield the same strain the person had, but it yielded Newport and Pomona. And here is a turtle tank water from a pet store, and it got a couple of different strains coming out of this one as well. It got the Pomona B, which is here, and also Puna B, which is here. So it makes us feel like all of these are tied together somehow because we're finding turtles that have 2 or 3 different serotypes in them that are all associated with these outbreaks. Some of the, what I call them, loopholes, some of the things we've talked to people, some of them are gifts. Some of them say, oh, my aunt came to visit from Mexico last month and brought us a baby turtle. Some were purchased from flea markets. A couple were purchased from the internet. They, you know, said we purchased them from this internet. So we went and looked on the internet, and you can find the disclaimer that you have to use it for scientific research, but it's usually, I had to log on at the point of purchasing to get the link to go to the disclaimer. Well, people aren't going to read the link. They're just going to skip over it. I'm going to do that on a lot of things. Check the box, you go on. And so something that I would love to see, we could partner with some of you guys, is a box that pops up when you put them in your shopping cart. It pops up and says, these should be used for scientific purposes. They're not recommended for kids under five for this reason. They're scientific or research, but I don't have to submit any sort of a form that says, yes, I'm a teacher. I'm a veterinarian. I can't buy heartworm medication for my dog over the internet without putting any of their prescription or a copy of my license. So I'd love to see some way that we could actually have proof of your profession required to purchase the small guys. And then we have the buy cage and get the turtle free, which I would love to know from some of the states who actually regulate some of the sales. If you have any language in your laws that regulate this, buy the cage, get the turtle free. That was how we got our hermit crab friend this summer. He bought the cage and got the hermit crab free. And this one, I tried to cover all the names. I apologize if this is anybody's website. I'm not picking specifically on anyone. But this one had, be sure to check our policy page, but there was no link to that page to find very quickly. And I couldn't find it on the left nav, anything called policy page. You had to dig to try to find the information. And then when I did log in, put through my cart, went like I was going to purchase and click the terms, I had to go way down the page to actually find the terms. And it says, you agree you're not obtaining any turtles to be used as a pet.
Well, that's going to stop them.
Right. But then you go to the testimonial page for the same site, and it says, I just received my 3DB turtle sliders, and they're so cute. You made my dream of having a pet turtle come true. So I would just say, if you're going to put on your website that they can't be sold pets, don't put disclaimers up, or don't put up testimonials that say we love our pet turtle, because it's sending mixed messages to the community. And then it makes us be suspicious of what's going on. So this is our educational flyer that we've made, and I apologize, I printed out 75 beautiful, lovely color copies, and they somehow got lost in Atlanta this past week. But they can be printed off the website. We have 8x11 flyers, we have smaller flyers, we have big posters. We'd love to encourage people who own pet stores to put some of these in their pet stores. You can download them, use them as you see fit. We have them in English, Spanish, and French, so you can put them into your shops for any of the main languages you might encounter. And it's about amphibians and reptiles. It basically just says you can get salmonella, you should wash your hands, don't put them in your kitchen, keep them away from your food. Children under five shouldn't be allowed to handle them, and older children should be monitored more closely. I have an 8-year-old, he still sucks with some continuously. I can't monitor him all the time, so I wouldn't want him playing with something until I was able to make sure he washed his hands. We'd be happy to partner with you guys if there are other suggestions or recommendations you have. One of the things, we've had a successful partnership with NPIP. I wasn't able to get the picture, but a couple of the hatcheries, part of the baby poultry backyard flock phenomenon, we've been seeing increases in salmonella in humans, more adults than kids with the backyard poultry. But one of the hatcheries has started shipping. We have a flyer just like this one for the chickens, but it's baby chick information. It's got pictures of chickens and baby ducklings. One of the hatcheries has started folding that flyer and sending it out with every shipment of chickens that goes into a home. So at least when you get your chickens, you also get a flyer that says, warning, these can carry salmonella, not to discourage you from owning them, but here's how to own them and keep yourself from getting sick at the same time. So we would love to work with the industry on some kind of partnership like this where flyers and information can be distributed. And maybe some of you do, but maybe some of you don't, and you'd be willing to help us out and start sending things out. Could we do something similar with reptiles, turtles, frozen rodents? We love to partner with you guys. We don't want to clamp down and say, no, nobody can ever have a turtle or a reptile, because I know they make fantastic pets. So how can we keep – our job is to keep humans from getting sick. Your job is to sell your reptiles. How can we work on that together? So that's all I had.
Okay.
Sure, who's next?
That was great.
Thank you.